Joining me on the line is Scott DiCarlo, the police officer who stopped the five dancing Israelis on 9/11. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me, man.
Scott, we talked a little bit prior to this interview about this whole matter.
Right.
And I said to you just before we started that you and your story are in 9/11 legend and lore, and you told me that you just don't know why, right?
That's correct.
Now, Scott, this is the first interview you've ever given. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. I know there's a video out there on the net that was done by some production company where they filmed you, I guess, for about a minute or so. But besides that, you've really never spoke out about this particular day, right?
No, I don't see a reason to.
Okay. Well, let's start from the beginning. You're a police officer in New Jersey on 9/11. I guess you're working in the afternoon. What shift were you on?
I actually wasn't working, Dave. I was off that day. We had pretty much a full department recall after the incident took place in New York City. At that point, you know, we all got put somewhere and did what we had to do.
Did they call you in like right in the morning when all this happened?
Yes, sir, yeah. Okay. As a matter of fact, I don't remember if I called them and said, hey, do you need me or what, but the entire department ended up going in.
Right. And what happened?
Basically, you know, we had to shut down traffic on our highways to prevent traffic going east of our jurisdiction towards the city to try to ease up the traffic issues and try to ease up pressure on the police departments that way so they could do what they could at the Trade Center site.
Okay.
I was posted on the highway.
You're talking about like Route 3?
Yeah, Route 3 and the service road right out by the turnpike.
Okay, near the Meadowlands.
Correct.
I guess you could see the towers from there, couldn't you?
Yeah, unfortunately.
How did the day unfold?
We were out there for hours just trying to work with traffic, and the public had no idea what was going on, and we really didn't have a full knowledge of what was going on. So, you know, tempers are flaring and people need to get home, but we weren't able to let anybody go east of our jurisdiction at that point. So it was a rough day, to say the least, you know, all around.
So this was probably in the morning, and then in the afternoon, what happened with that call about that white van?
There was a BOLO, which is a be on the lookout for a particular van with, there's supposed to be a few occupants in there. And the BOLO basically stated that this van may be on its way to destroy the George Washington Bridge or something like that, if I remember correctly, and blow up the bridge and perhaps explosives were in the van or something. So we were out there and, you know, of course, we're all looking for it and just happened to come our way. There were several officers out there. I grabbed my sergeant and I said, hey man, you know, that's our van. It wasn't the exact plate given either. It was off by one numeral, I believe. And I'm like, it's got to be, it's just too close. So we ended up stopping him.
So you were the one who noticed it, not your sergeant.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But I mean, we both were there. We were all there. So
you noticed the plate wasn't right. So really it was you who eyed this.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Okay. That's significant. Because if you didn't have a very good attention to detail, then it might have just gone by and none of this would have happened, because this was a very significant part of the whole 9/11 mystery, and it continues to be. And that's why there's such great interest in this. You saw the van drive by on Route 3, is that right?
Yeah, it was coming off the turnpike and hitting the service road trying to get on Route 3.
Then what happened right after that? Were you close enough to run next to them? Did you have to get in the car? What happened?
Oh, no. I mean, traffic was basically rolling at 2 miles an hour. So we just basically stopped it, just got in front of it, stopped it.
You walked out in front of it and you stopped it?
Yeah, we just put our hands up and asked them to get out of the vehicle. They didn't listen and we removed them.
Do you happen to remember where you were exactly? Were you on the driver's side?
Yeah, I was on the driver's side.
Okay. And did you have your weapons drawn?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. And you were pointing the weapons at the driver and you said, get out of the car?
Correct.
And the driver didn't listen?
No.
Now, you've been doing this for a while, right? How long have you been a police officer?
16 years now.
Why do you think the driver didn't listen?
To tell you the truth, I really don't know, but being that there was a possibility of explosives being in the vehicle, I wasn't going to wait and, you know, ask him again.
Did you think about that, why he might not have obeyed your order with a gun pointed at him?
Sure. In that brief moment, yeah, you know, you think about it and, you know, you don't know what's going through their mind. As I stated earlier, the BOLO stipulated that there may be explosives in the van, so we removed them.
Okay, so it was him and it was a couple other guys. It was, what, a total of five of them?
Correct, yeah.
Did you have any idea at that time the nationality of these men?
No, sir, but when we removed them, I forget which guy it was, kind of chatty, but hey, we're not your enemy, we're your friend, our enemies are your enemies, or whatever. At that point, they said they were from Israel or something, and I don't remember exactly what they said, but it was something along them lines.
Did you think that was something strange for this guy to make an unsolicited comment like that?
At the time, I didn't put much weight to it. If you're up to no good, you're going to say anything to make me feel better at that point, right?
I guess. It just seems kind of a strange thing. On this website here that I mentioned to you earlier, historycommons.org, they tell this story here. They say, "We are Israeli. We are not your problem. Your problems are our problems. The Palestinians are the problem." And
yeah,
then it goes on.
Like
yeah, something like that. And then it says, "Again, before the police have made any mention of the 9/11 attacks, another one of the arrested men says, 'We were on the West Side Highway in New York City during the incident.'" Do you remember if that happened?
You know, man, I don't.
Right. And then it says in this article here, in fact, it will later be determined they were on the roof of a building at Liberty State Park watching and videotaping the first crash into the World Trade Center. If this is true, for people to be filming the first crash might be indicative of the fact that they knew that something was going to happen. Did you get any feeling from these guys that they knew anything about the incident?
No. No.
Nothing?
Nope. I didn't see any video cameras in the truck. You know, I don't know if these were the guys, you know, that everybody claims was videotaping. I don't know that. Basically, my job was to stop it if this were, in fact, the van on the Bolo. That's basically it. We didn't spend much time with them. We didn't interview them. The FBI arrived. We brought them over to the state police holding cells in the stadium area.
So how long were you actually with them before the FBI arrived?
Maybe 15 minutes before we actually brought them to the holding area. We weren't going to keep them out there.
Sure. How were they acting when all this was happening? Did you take note of that?
They were under arrest. I mean, they weren't really happy.
Were they resisting arrest?
No, they didn't resist, but there were a lot more of us at that point than there were of them.
That was a concern of yours, though, that there were only two initially and there were five of them, that things might have gotten out of control?
No, that never crossed my mind.
Did they come quietly?
Once they were in handcuffs, they didn't resist at all.
Were they chatty, like that other fellow was?
It just kept kind of saying, you know, hey, look, you know, we're on your side kind of thing, if I remember correctly.
Then it says one man is found with $4,700 in cash hidden in his sock. Another has two foreign passports on him, and a box cutter is found in the van. You didn't have anything to do with looking through the van, did you?
No, I didn't inventory the van, but keep in mind a box cutter in a moving van is too out of sorts.
Right, sure. I mean, $4,700 in somebody's sock is probably...
Well, if they're a moving company and they got paid, I don't know.
Right.
I'm not to speculate, you know.
I mean, all we can do is speculate. It becomes academic at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But again, to this day, 10 years after 9/11, people are intensely interested in you and what happened that day.
I don't see why they're interested in me. I mean, I told you before, I get a lot of interesting emails, you know, asking me about that day and my Facebook or my MySpace. And I have nothing to say. I mean, everything that I'm telling you is that's all we did. You know, we stopped them. And, you know, the FBI came along and interviewed them.
You stop them. They don't get out of the car initially for whatever reason or reasons. We don't know why, but they didn't. One would think that with a police officer pointing his weapon at you, you would do as he says or she says right away.
We transported them to the, like I said, the state police holding area inside the Meadowlands and Giant Stadium, and that's the last I saw them. I didn't actually see the FBI take custody of them. We left them with the state police there.
And that was it? You were done? Did you have to go back to the office and fill out a report, or did you do it right in your vehicle?
No, the report was done later. We were still out on the highway for quite a while.
When this happened, you probably didn't think much of it, right?
No, I didn't. Once we dropped them off, you know, my mind was on the devastation 7 or 8 miles away. You know, the people that perished there and, you know, all the damage and whatnot to people's lives and buildings and whatnot.
Did you find out later on the significance of these fellas that you stopped?
Yeah, but, you know, as far as I knew, it was just perhaps we had the wrong van, if there was another van or whatnot. And, you know, to this day, I couldn't even tell you if we had the right van, if these guys were the ones that were wanted for cheering or dancing or whatever they were doing, supposedly doing anyway. You know, I have no proof that that was them. I just stopped the van. It was off by one numeral on the plate. And we did what we could at that point. And if it wasn't them, then I need to apologize for them for, you know, locking up the wrong people. But I did what I had to do, you know, at that point and what I thought was the right thing to do.
Did it get physical at all when you had to arrest them?
I wouldn't say it got physical. I mean, we just physically removed them from the van. I mean, they didn't resist, you know, in any way. We kind of manhandled them, put them in handcuffs, and did it as quick as we possibly could because, as far as we were concerned, it was a very dangerous situation if there were explosives in the van, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you had to physically remove all five of them from the van. They didn't peacefully come out of the van.
They didn't fight, but they were sitting in the van. They weren't coming out quickly, so we got them out.
Did that seem a little bit arrogant to you?
I didn't think so at the time. You know, I don't know if you've ever had a gun pointed at you, but some people tend to freeze. Other people may do exactly what you want them to do immediately, and other people may freeze because some situation like that they've never seen before.
Based on your 16 years of experience, do you think that that was the case, that they were freezing, or do you think that there was something else to it?
I don't remember. It just seems like some of them might have froze. That was kind of the way I looked at it at the time.
Okay. In fact, what I had mentioned before about one man is found with $4,700 in cash hidden in his sock, another has two foreign passports on him and a box cutter. These are from news reports. That one in particular is from, I believe, ABC News.
Mm-hmm.
And these were factual reports. So these were the men. Another has pictures of the men standing with the burning wreckage of the World Trade Center in the background. Again, that's from another media report. All five identify themselves as Israeli citizens and claim to be working for the New Jersey-based Urban Moving Systems Company. In addition to the driver, the others are identified. Actually, two of them were brothers. I'm not going to go through their names because I can't really pronounce them and I don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
The men were detained but not charged. Again, this is from varied news reports. The next day, it will be reported that bomb-sniffing dogs reacted as if they had detected explosives. An investigator high up in the Bergen County law enforcement hierarchy will say in 2006, there are maps of the city in the car with certain places highlighted. It looked like they're hooked in with this, referring to the 9/11 attacks. It looked like they knew what was going to happen when they were at Liberty State Park. And that, of course, is from the Bergen Record. The FBI will later conclude at least two of the five are Mossad agents and that all were on a Mossad surveillance mission. The FBI interrogates them for weeks. Scott, are you familiar with the Mossad?
No.
Okay. Well, that would be the Israeli equivalent of the CIA.
Okay.
They are held on immigration violation charges, but will be released 71 days later. Again, that's from ABC News. So these were the guys, and they were intelligence agents. And that's one of the reasons why there's still so much interest in what you did.
I didn't do much, man.
Well, you feel that, and you might really believe that, and I believe you do. But there are many people around the world that believe that what you did was crack open a window into who the real perpetrators of 9/11 are.
I can't be sure of that. You know what I mean? Like I said, we stopped these people, put them in a holding cell. That's all I know. I don't know what else to say about it, you know?
Right.
I can't say anything further about it because I don't have the knowledge. But, you know, that's what you're telling me. That's what I got to believe then, right?
That is the truth. These guys that you had the great fortune of arresting, of noticing, those were part of the Israeli intelligence operation. There's a lot more to it than just this, but what you did was you actually produced hard evidence. The other part of hard evidence that you might not be aware of were the Israeli art students who were arrested prior, during, and after 9/11. Did you hear about that matter? Well, there were over 200 Israelis who were posing as art students who were surveilling certain government individuals and offices and who were also living in close proximity to the alleged hijackers.
Right.
So that also fits into this whole thing. That's why when we were talking earlier and you said you're still getting emails from people.
Right.
You're also a musician, and I want to talk about that in a little bit. So you have a couple of websites. I'm not going to give the websites out, only if you want to, you can. It's up to you.
It's scottdicarlo.com, scottdicarlo.net,
okay.
And sb6music.com.
Okay. As a musician, you have a MySpace page. I guess that's the way MySpace started, right? To cater to the musical
industry. Yeah, originally it was for music, correct, yeah.
And you have, of course, a Facebook page and a YouTube and a Twitter account, right?
Yes, sir.
When did you first start getting emails regarding this matter?
I don't remember exactly. Maybe a year after the incident, 2 years after. But they just kept coming.
When you got the first one, do you remember what it said?
They all basically say the same thing. Are you the Scott DiCarlo that, you know, worked such and such a police department and did this on 9/11, blah, blah, blah. So that kind of thing. And do you know anything about the situation? Just inquisitive type of questioning. You know, like people want to know what I knew about what you're talking about here. And I responded to the first couple going, I really don't know anything. That is me, yeah, but check out my music. I don't know anything.
So 2002, approximately, you get the first one, and they've been coming in ever since, right?
Correct, yeah.
How often do they come in?
they stopped for a little while, and they trickle about two or three here and there, and one here, one there, you know. And then recently, you know, I guess because of the 10-year anniversary of that dreadful day, I guess people are, you know, researching and that kind of thing. I guess, you know, my police department's name will come up with the report or whatever, and obviously my name will be there. And I had a little influx, you know, in August of emails.
Mm-hmm. And when was the last one you got?
A couple days ago.
Same thing, though, right?
Yeah, just inquisitive, you know, just looking to see if I have any knowledge about the situation.
Are there common themes in the emails that you get? Do a lot of them talk about Israel?
I've had a couple that say, hey, can you tell me, you know, were these Israelis, was there any truth to them being Mossad? Things like that, that's about it.
Did any of these emails ask to speak with you?
I've gotten a couple with phone numbers, you know, hey, give me a call, you know, I'd love to talk about it. The whole point of doing this interview with you is just so people stop contacting me, because I don't have any information, you know, other than what we did on the side of the road, and that was minimal. We did nothing but put these guys in handcuffs and transport them to the jail cell, and then they were transferred custody.
So if you could talk to the listeners who want to email you, want to contact you, what would you tell them?
Man, call somebody else, because I don't know anything. Stop emailing me. Stop messaging me on Facebook or MySpace, you know, because I don't know anything. And, you know, it's a situation that I don't know. I don't have the knowledge that, you know, people are looking for, and I would appreciate it if they'd stop contacting me.
So basically, you would just wish that they'd leave you alone because there's nothing more you could tell them.
Yeah, I don't know. So,
listeners, you heard it here first. No need to email Scott anymore because he doesn't know anything. You heard everything he knows. We talked about it. So this is it. I mean, this is the first and probably last interview he's ever going to give on the subject, I would imagine. Am I right, Scott?
That's correct.
Now, I want to give your website address because you are a very talented musician. I did listen to a couple of your songs, and I really enjoyed them. First website I have up here is scottdecarlo.net. Of course, that's S-C-O-T-T-D-E-C-A-R-L-O, scottdecarlo.net. And the other website is sd6music.com. I'll do this in the, like I usually do, in the NATO alphabet. That's Sierra, Delta, Sierra, India, X-Ray, Mike, Uniform, Sierra, India, Charlie.com. SD, of course, that stands for Scott DeCarlo, 6, written out 6, because that's how many members are in the band. Music, because it's music. sd6music.com. Scott, you're going to be playing down near my neck of the woods next week.
Yeah, in Brick.
In
yeah,
Brick.
Next Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. And is this a big gig for you?
Yeah, it is a pretty big gig. We're actually opening up for a gentleman by the name of Christian Kane, and I'm a fan of his music, so it's kind of exciting for me. So it's going to be fun.
Cool. Do you travel outside the state of New Jersey at all?
Yeah, I did a lot of traveling to Nashville and Florida. We play up in Boston every now and then. New York.
Nice. What kind of music is it for the listeners?
We've kind of dubbed it 21st century rock. Got a whole lot of rock to it with the comforts of the South, and it's got a little twist of country and some pop in it.
So because this is really such a significant event, even though to you it's nothing, and I understand why you feel that way, but I hope that you now have a new appreciation of why it is something so significant to people. Do you?
I appreciate it for sure. I don't know what I believe, but I definitely appreciate the knowledge that you've just given me. You know, I didn't hear all that. You know, it is what it is at this point. You know, it's 10 years later, and I'm more worried about making life a better day every day, you know, for people around me, and than worrying about what people think on that particular day with the people that I dealt with. You know, it's not something that I think about too much.
So is there anything else in closing that you'd like to tell the listeners? Because I can guarantee you that this interview, because of the significance of it in the 9/11 legend and lore and the story, this interview will literally go around the globe, and I'm sure that millions of people will hear it. Is there anything you want to tell those people?
Visit the memorial. It's beautiful. Take the negative of that day and try and spin it for positive. You know, I don't really know what else to say.
Scott DeCarlo, police sergeant in New Jersey. I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners, and looking forward to seeing you perform and speaking with you again.
Thanks, man. I look forward to it, too.